Good morning. I'm going to go ahead and call this meeting to order, even though we don't have quorum. We're going to go ahead and start with some of the background information. And if, when we have a quorum, then we will approve the minutes of February 26th. I think some of us are a little rowdy this morning, so I'm going to encourage all of us to now focus on the business at hand, and that is Representative Bingham has House File 2657, and Representative Bingham, are you ready to start?
Well, a couple of my witnesses aren't here. But that's independent on the questions that people have, whether we need them or not, actually. So we can proceed, and I do have the D3 amendment that I would need moved to, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Oh, never mind. The witnesses just came.
Wonderful. Representative
Bingham,
you have the
Leach-All
amendment.
Correct. DE3, yep.
DE3 amendment, yes. In your packet. Why don't you go ahead and start explaining the amendment?
Okay. Madam Chair, members, first off, thank you for allowing me to come today before the committee to talk about student safety. And the amendment for House File 2657 relates to sexual misconduct between students and teachers, and by teachers. And first part of the amendment, I'm going to back up for a second. You know, we've seen in the news stories about incidences like this, and I believe that House File 2657, as amended, will put an extra layer of security for our students and for the hiring authorities in education institutions in Minnesota. So what the DE3 amendment does is, upon the time of initial hiring, we will have the school hiring authority go to the Department of Education's website, and under the license lookup feature, we will have an asterisk, and we don't do that right now, so this is a new part of the bill, and what that asterisk would indicate is that an individual has had disciplinary action taken against their license related to sexual misconduct with a student. The amendment defines sexual misconduct as sexual contact or attempted sexual contact between teacher and student, and that contact can include physical contact, verbal, written, or pictorial interaction. And so if you go to the website and if that asterisk appears, the school hiring authority must contact the Board of Teaching to find out the extent and the substance of that disciplinary action taken against the individual prior to hiring that individual. One more thing in the amendment is that the school hiring authority, in their application for employment, must require the individual to disclose current and previous disciplinary actions in Minnesota and elsewhere taken against the teacher's license as a result of sexual misconduct with the student, and to intentionally submit false or incomplete information is grounds for dismissal. So with that, I would ask for your support for the amendment, and I can stand for questions on the amendment, and I also have witnesses that will testify in support of the amendment.
Thank you for your flexibility, Representative Bingham. Now we have a quorum, so I'm going to go ahead and ask for a motion for Representative Bingham's bill, House File 2657,
to get it before the committee. Madam Chair, I will move. Representative Bingham,
thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move from House File
2657 for inclusion.
All those in favor?
For passage.
For passage. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No. I want John to be.
Representative Wardlow, you were just on the record voting against tightening of sexual misconduct between teachers and students. So, I'm kidding.
So, Representative Bingham has an office amendment labeled DE3. The chair moves adoption of DE3 amendment to put the bill in the form that the author intends. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Are
you tired here now? Yes, they can, if they want to come down one by one in just like 30 seconds if possible. I just want people to gather the scope of the support of the bill.
Good morning, welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alfiger, Education of Minnesota. We appreciate Representative Bingham's willingness to work with us on this bill so that we have an amendment that is very workable. And Education Minnesota can support it. So thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, Member Chris Paul, the Minnesota School Board Association. I would like to thank Senator Bingham for her work on this area. She has been delightful and inclusive throughout sort of a rigorous process that was done on this bill. And we appreciate her commitment to children and thank her for this bill.
Thank you. And forgive me for not being part of the education committee, but also the organization that Charlie Kite represents, which is, I believe, the school board?
No.
School administrators, I'm sorry, support the board. Unless, are they here? I did not, okay. So they've been part of this program, and I'd like to thank them. And I'd like to thank all the organizations, Chair Mariani, Chair Greiling, and all the other members that have helped me along on this proposal.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing this opportunity. My name is Karen Balmer. I'm with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. We have worked with Representative Bingham on the language, and it, as noted earlier, it has had a number of iterations, and we believe that this is a strong bill. We believe that it will serve as a further protection for our students across on the front lines through applications, and then at the state level, the information that will be noted on the website with an asterisk is already public information. This will make it public in a different and more accessible way. Thank you.
Thank you. Karen, would you like me to stay up there for a second in case there are questions? Any questions for members? Representative Demmer.
Yeah. Detmer.
Sorry, Detmer.
That's okay.
Let's see. I'm counting my mistakes. Madam
Chairman and Representative Bingham, does this only apply just to sexual misconduct? Would it apply for abuse or anything like that?
Madam Chair and Representative Detmer, if there is a abuse or whatever, that would be criminal. That would already be disclosed. And as far as the application process, the latter part of the amendment, that would cover that aspect of it too. So.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Balmer, could you help explain how the Board of Teaching or the Licensing Division is going to do this? I know there's going to be an asterisk, but what will be the process you use? Could you explain that, please?
Certainly. Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, the Board of Teaching has, since its inception, had a disciplinary function to it. So this is nothing new in terms of the Board of Teaching's responsibility to investigate allegations of misconduct and breaches of the Code of Conduct, Code of Ethics, excuse me, for teachers. So we already have a disciplinary committee in place. It's comprised of two of our board members who are practicing and licensed teachers. That committee makes recommendations to the full board for final action. When final action is taken and brought before the full board of teaching, for it does require the signature of the teacher. So there has been a negotiation process. We have, in those circumstances, been in close contact with the teacher, and if the teacher is represented by an attorney, then of course the attorney as well. to reach an agreement and a settlement for disciplinary action as a result of their misconduct. So when in instances when we are not able to reach an agreement, then we do proceed to an administrative hearing before an administrative law judge. Does that help with the process in terms of the question you're asking?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Ballmer. If I used to serve on the disciplinary committee when I was a member of the Board of Teaching, and I think it's important that members know that we have a very thorough process that we go through as we study the complaints that come forth and a very decisive action. And Nancy Triplett, if she were here today, would explain very specifically how in-depth the Board of Teaching members who serve on that disciplinary action committee study each complaint and determine whether there will be disciplinary action done. And it served us very well. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bigham, thank you for this bill and just to add another safeguard for our students. And my question, I know you have another bill coming up here relating to coaches.
Yes.
And my question is, the current bill that we're talking about just deals with teachers. What about hiring? What about other educational staff that's hired? Have you thought at all about including all educational staff?
Madam Chair, Representative Ward, I certainly think that's a good idea, and if somebody brings that forward, that's not part of this bill. I really wanted to address a lot of the issues that were going on in the press, and I just saw a need for this, and I know a lot of other members of the committee did too. So I didn't deal with all employees, but I'd be happy to work with you on that.
Any other questions from members? Representative Hector.
Thank you, Chair Dietrich. And I just want to thank Karen Ballmer. We've been working back and forth, and there's a lot of troops that are needing waivers on their licenses because they're not here. And I know you helped me in a couple of them, and I really appreciate it. And just remember the soldier out there. Some of them don't have a decision when they're going to be called back to Rock. So we have a lot of young teachers out there that are going through this right now.
One final thank you. I'd like to really thank Lisa Larson, who has been very helpful and accommodating with this bill and putting together after draft after draft. But, so thank you, Lisa. And I just would appreciate your support on this, and thank you for your time on this bill.
Thank you both. Members, I apologize. I moved the bill before we adopted these three amendments. I could tell immediately because Representative Erickson was giggling. I wasn't. In kindness.
She's very good at it.
She is, and she's experienced. So anyhow, Representative Benson now removes the motion to pass House File 2657.
As
amended.
Where are we going? Before?
To pass and go to the general legislature. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Motion to go. Thank you. Okay. Representative Erdahl.
I have one.
I know you do. You're coming back. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Do you mind?
No,
Senator Bigger.
No, I'm giving you all calls of conversation.
I'll be.
No, okay.
We'll be quick.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for the indulgence of letting me move up on the agenda a little bit. The famous last words are, "Don't worry, your grandchildren aren't contagious anymore." I went to visit a couple nights ago, and I came back with a little case of the flu today. So,
thank you, Representative Erdahl. I just wanted to mention to people we are changing the agenda a little bit because Representative Erdahl does not feel well. So we're going to try to get his bill in the shape that it needs to be in and passed so that he can go home. So, Representative Erdahl, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. I'll move the amendment first, the A1 amendment.
Would you please...
Is that right?
Move the bill first.
bill first? You can. We got confused on the last. All right, I move the bill. 26.4.
So, Representative Erdahl moves that House File 26.4 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance with further recommendation to be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Division.
Yes.
Okay, all those in favor?
I hesitate.
Okay,
First I hesitate a little bit because I anticipate zero fiscal note on this bill. And therefore it shouldn't really need to go to finance, but they haven't provided me with a fiscal note yet. Can we move the amendment now? I move the A1 amendment. A2, I'm sorry. Put the glasses back on, it'll be better. All the A2 amendment does is change the oversight from MSU to the Department of Education. There's a bidding war as to who wanted it, and education won.
Representative Bird, I would like to move the amendment.
I move the amendment.
The A2 amendment.
Yes,
the A2. Representative Bird, I'll have an author's amendment to House File
26.4, labeled
A2,
the chair moves adoption, or Representative Erdahl moves adoption of the A2 amendment with the bill in the form that the author intends. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. All right, thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you.
House File 26.24 establishes a task force under the Department of Education to seek to improve teacher quality and identify institutional structures and strategies for effectively integrating secondary and post-secondary academic and career education. We face challenges in education. Everyone knows that, and they can hear. We can learn ways to meet these challenges by examining the good we do in Minnesota and also other states and internationally. I think most of you are aware that I was in Finland this fall, in September, for a week. I visited schools there. Their program cites that we need good teachers, we need to find ways to increase the number of master degree teachers, get the most out of our teachers, and then intervene to help struggling students. Minnesota and Minnesota leads much of the world in the elementary education levels of attainment. But it seems by fifth grade we're starting to fall behind, and by graduation from high school we're faced with a situation where about one-third of our students have to have remedial care when they get to college. And so basically all this does is to ask that we take a look at what some of these other places are doing, take a look at Finland, Singapore, not necessarily go there, but at least it would be nice, but at least, you know, look it over. Minnesota is good, but we could be better, and we should examine ways that can be attained. And that is what I have to say. I do have some people here that, at least one anyway. Here. Come on down.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Pat King, Minnesota Department of Education, and the department sponsors this bill, and we would look forward to working together on it. It aligns very nicely with the professional development that we're currently doing to affect the classroom teacher and the students in the classroom.
Very well, thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, and for that matter, the department's representative, do we have to legislate this to get this done? Couldn't we do this by conversations with the commissioner and just start the ball rolling as we do with D16? I mean, that they operate without this legislative involvement.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, yes, we probably could do that. But I find in a lot of areas it's better to bring people together to get the conversation, to collaborate, rather than, you know, getting this, going around talking to people about what ideas they have. I think we do better by bringing them together and by trying to actually coordinate some type of a plan on what we think should be done.
Madam Chair, follow up.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, those conversations would take place, but you know, I understand that you have a passion, and I do too, for these conversations to take place. But it is too bad that we always have to legislate this and not just give the department an unnamed authority, because they know that it's important to have these conversations, because your intent is excellent, you know, to move teachers more toward master's degrees in content, as you and I agree should happen, and then to, you know, concentrate on that career technical education piece so that it doesn't get lost. As we know, we're a more service-oriented society. So, you know, I will vote for it, I guess, but I think we could accomplish it without this legislation.
Thank you.
Representative Patrick.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl, and I agree with the bill. I don't necessarily agree with Representative Erickson's comments. I think we need a directive. Things don't happen unless there's something within legislation telling them that they need to do it, and I think we need a directive here, so thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since I'm a co-author on this bill, I think it's a really fantastic bill that you're bringing forward. And no, I've heard too many. Well, if you see us get up and leave, Madam Chair, it's because it's ready now. We haven't had it yet. But I've witnessed too many times where what's going on in a good teacher's classroom, where I've heard stories of a first grade team who's doing just wondrous things, but nobody's asking them. The principal's not even asking them to share what they're doing to the rest of the building. I think if we have direction from legislators saying, hey, you've got to look at what's happening, what's best practice in the classroom. I know that, you know, our district is trying to do that in 196, but I just agree with the idea that maybe there's got to be some direction from the legislators saying this is very important. We're falling behind other countries, and we shouldn't be, especially in Minnesota. And that's why I support this bill.
Any other comments? Okay, questions, concerns? Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak in favor or in opposition to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Erdahl renews his motion that House File 2624 be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Committee on Finance, with a further recommendation to be re-referred to the K-12 Finance Division. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you. Representative Erdahl, I thought you had stated that this didn't have to go to finance. Can't this go directly to the consent calendar? Well.
No.
General Register.
Representative Heiser and Representative Erdahl. There are some, I guess, that believe that there might be a fiscal note attached, and so we are awaiting a fiscal note. And at some point, we can also re-refer it.
All right. Madam Chair?
Yes, okay.
That's what I was going to ask. This is constructed in the same way that a previous task force I had on school security, which did have a zero fiscal note. So that's what I am anticipating. Can we just, through here, through a motion, do that to Representative Dreiling? Does it have to go to you?
Representative Erdahl, I'm just going to share a little story with you. Yesterday, I was in government office with Representative Pawlowski, and he referred my bill to a finance committee, and I was giving the same argument you did, and I didn't have any luck.
No.
I think I'm going to follow Representative Pawlowski.
That's okay.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Erickson. For all those in favor, all those in favor,
aye.
Opposed? The motion
is
passed. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you very much.
Representative Bigham.
thank you for your patience. And Representative Erdahl, really, thank you for your patience.
Madam Chair, I do have a couple amendments. I have the A1 and then I have an oral amendment.
Representative Bigham, if we move your bill first, is there anybody who would move Representative Bigham's bill?
Madam Chair.
House File 2782. I will not make the same mistake again, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File
2782. Representative Ward will move that House File 2782 be recommended to pass. Representative Bigham, now you have an author's amendment labeled A1, is that correct?
Yes.
And the chair moves adoption of the A1 amendment to the bill in the form that the author intends. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Bigham, would you please proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have one more oral amendment. I thought it was going to be a written amendment, and if it is the, if it's okay with the chair, I'm going to have Kirk from the School Board Association talk about it. It's a technical amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Snyderlin.
Madam Chair, members, good morning. My name is Kirk Snyderlin on staff of the Minnesota School Board Association. And we're just seeking some consistency here. We've talked to Representative Bigham about this, and she's been great to work with on this issue. And under present law, when you hire a teacher, there is a conditional piece in there where you, if they go through the background check, you have some time after you've hired that teacher to get the background check back. And it may be as simple as 2 days or 3 days to get that background check completed, and if there's some red flags on there, then you can dismiss or discharge that employee who you've hired. And this piece right here, and under the proposed bill, what this says to us is we cannot hire the person until the background check is completed. And so we're seeking consistency. So for example, under present law, I could hire a teacher/coach and hire that person and then wait for the background check, which may be as short as 2 or 3 days. If that, under this present law, we couldn't hire a coach or someone in the extracurricular area until that background check is completed. And so we're seeking some consistency here, and for those situations where we've hired a coach 2 weeks out and then a family emergency comes up in the day before and that person can no longer coach or provide assistance to the debate team, and then you're left hanging or waiting for that background check to come. So the piece that we're suggesting is moving is the last. Do you want to do that?
Oh yeah, I really can't move it. We're not on the committee, so we may need Representative Ward to do it again.
Is the last sentence of the bill, the amended version, where on the page 3, line 3.1, right after service, put a period after service and then delete the remainder of the sentence.
Except for 3.4.
Madam Chair, members, on the bill, House File 2782, page 3, line 1, delete, comma, and the school. Page 3, lines 2 and 3, delete everything up to services, so that the end of the sentence is regardless of the term of service period. And those are the two amendments integrated, the written and oral amendments.
Representative Wardlow.
Well, I'll wait till after we're done with the amendments, Madam Chair.
So, are there any other questions on the amendment? The chair moves the oral amendment to House File 2782. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, again, thanks for allowing me to come back up and talk about another safety issue. There have been some stories, and I have copies of them, about some incidences with coaches and misconduct. And right now, there's a lot of school districts already do this because they have do background. This bill, I'm sorry, does criminal background checks on coaches. It's going to have the state require that background checks are completed on coaches. And right now, some school districts, because they are teacher and coaches, that's already covered. Some places already do this regardless of whether they're a teacher. But right now, I'm looking for a consistent policy statewide, so that everybody is on a level playing field, no pun intended, and that we don't have holes in our system and in our state, that people that may be predispositioned to prey on children would then seek that area out to offend. So this is a very straightforward bill. It's a BCA background check on coaches. And I have a testifier from the Minnesota High School League. And again, we would be entertaining questions, but maybe my testifier should say his piece first.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. I'm Roger Arntz, and I represent the Minnesota State High School League. I also represent the Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals. And I want to say we appreciate Representative Bingham involving us in this process, and been a good process, and we support the bill.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to testify in favor or in opposition to the bill? Mm-hmm. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question either for Mr. Aronson or Representative Bingham. In listening to Representative Bingham's comments a moment ago, it occurred to me that as written, this applies to athletic coaches, and it specifies athletic coaches. Is there a concern about someone who might be hired to coach the debate team, which is not an athletic activity, or coach isn't the right word, but sponsor or facilitate a junior achievement, or here?
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, that's what the amendment fixed.
So I should have been paying attention earlier.
Possibly, but I won't hold it against you.
Thank you. I'm going to go away now.
Madam Chair, I did read the amendment, and that's why I don't need my question anymore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Aronson, I talked to all of my school superintendents the other day, and they told me they're already doing this. So do you know to what extent school districts are already requiring background checks before hiring anyone who works in the activity area?
Madam Chair, Representative Aronson, I think that is the standard practice. I think this is going to catch everyone who doesn't do that, and that we bring the uniformity into all of this. I think the amendment as well, to the extent that it says extracurricular activities, as Representative Dabney underscored a moment ago, that broadens this significantly. So I think that it's going to bring a lot of good practice there.
And Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Aronson, it's true that the applicant pays the cost of the BCA check, right?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, that's correct.
Sure. Thank you.
Representative Gottlob. Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank Representative Bingham for bringing this forward. I've signed on as a co-author. I think it's a good idea. My only possible criticism or suggestion is that, like your previous bill, I think some of this could have been lumped together. If we're doing this for coaches and extracurriculars, we could certainly expand that. Frankly, any school staff that has significant interaction with students, or even volunteers who have significant interaction with students, should be following this process, or districts should be following this process with them to do background checks. So my only suggestion would have been to expand the scope of the bill a bit and add in those people. I mean, if we're really trying to protect our children, that would be a vitally important thing. But I think this is a good step.
Representative
thank you, Representative Gottwald, for that constructive criticism. I appreciate it.
Madam Chair, I just want to make sure I understand this now. Schools then will be required to do this. There'd be no exception. My only concern, I guess, is that in my local school district, the coaches we've hired recently are local individuals. They're people that have grown up in the community, that have worked in the community, have maybe taught in the school system, and have now been hired as a coach. It just seems unnecessary for them to have to do that. But I understand, I guess, the ultimate goal here. But in my local situation, you're just mandating some expense and a procedure that, you know, should not be even just necessary. But I'm not arguing against the bill. I'm just saying that there are times when that occurs. So when you're hiring people you know, to me, again, it just seems unnecessary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. when I was the head wrestling coach in my high school, I had several coaches working with me that were outside the district, and I knew them very well. But if you read the newspapers, a lot of times the abuse comes from someone that you would least expect it to come from, and people knew them very well. So I think this is a good bill to catch the coaches that are outside the district. You know, when they're teachers and coaches, they've already been caught. You know, they've already been checked over. And I know that if I volunteer to coach again, I would not be offended if they did check me out to make sure I was still okay. So I guess I would argue again. My friend on my left here.
I just want to point out, I'm not arguing, but I'm just pointing out that, and I'm not sure how, if this is 100% assurance either. I think you still have people that will flip through that safety net as well. So,
Madam Chair, there's a first time for everything, so you're right.
Representative Detmer. Yes, Madam Chairman. And yes, I also support this bill, because if many of you go back and ask your athletic directors, activities directors, how many coaches they hire now, they're outside the realm of the schools, you'd be surprised. I'd say the majority of them are hired from outside. And this would not be the only institution that would be doing background checks. I mean, churches are doing that now with people that are coming and working with their youth and so forth. So it's a good bill.
Thank you. Coming from the coach of the year, weren't you at one point?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I had to have a DCA check to be a Sunday school teacher, so I saw Mr. Detmer. I've been checked out to teach Sunday school. But I passed. You know what's interesting is they ran the wrong check. They ran it on my maiden name, and it was so amusing. I had to go back, and I sat there and waited because I went to DCA, and so I wanted it immediately because I had to teach Sunday school in a few days. And this was a few years ago. And they ran my maiden name, so I took it, looked at it, and said, well, this is not who I am anymore. But anyway, Ms. Larson, can you review for us very quickly, what is it that we already require in regard to BCA checks for school employees? Because I think that, and maybe you want to report to us later, because this might take you a while, but I think we do require a pretty extensive check in regard to what, I can't remember who was asking the question about checking others. Norris, yes.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, you are correct. We do have a criminal background check provision currently in statute in 123B03, and we direct a school hiring authority to request a criminal history background check from the BCA on all individuals who are offered employment in the school. In addition, the school hiring authority has the discretion to request a criminal history background check on any individual who seeks to enter a school or its grounds for the purpose of serving as a school volunteer or working as an independent contractor or student employee.
Thank you. Representative Mariani. Madam Chair, it's just a comment for Representative Bigham. I know that some of the queries here have been around potentially expanding it to include all sorts of other activities and individuals, and I think there's agreement here that there's a desire to look at that, but I think what Representative Bingham has is a pretty tightly constructed bill that's been very carefully vetted through, obviously involving Ms. Aronson and the high school league. I think was really wise. So, members, I just want to encourage that we certainly move forward with a very well vetted, tightly constructed bill, and I think we can continue to work on some of the other issues as next steps.
Thank you. Representative Bingham, do you have any questions
or comments? No, thank you for your time, and I would appreciate your support.
Thank you. Hearing none, Representative Ward removes his motion at House File 2782. Be recommended to pass as amended. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Bingham, and thank you for your patience. We are going to move on to House File 2623, Representative Darton. Members, it is my intention to move this bill, but we are going to eventually lay it on the table because there is some more work and some merging and that type of thing, behind the scenes work that we still want to continue to do on this bill is my impression. So may I have a motion to get Representative Norton's bill before the committee? Representative Dabney moves the House File 2623 be recommended to pass. I was going to go with the motion again, thank you. Members, I think I've already explained that, so Representative Norton, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a very simple bill, the way I like them, one page. What it's doing is directing the Department of Education, when they contract for testing services in the future, to work with the contractor to find the latest date possible for testing and have the results back to the schools by the end of the first week of May. And I'll give you just a little background on this. I attended an education conference in Rochester this year. The speaker was from the state of Florida and talking about how they've been able to make some changes in their education system. One of the advantages that the speaker, who was from the Department of Education, touted was the reason Florida gets their tests back first is because their state law is written such that they have to contract for early return of those results because of state law. And so that raised the issue with me, why would we let Florida have that advantage and why would we not be one of the states that requires early return under statute? So there are several reasons I think this is good, one of which, if we get our results back in a timely manner before the year ends, first week of May is the date we look at and we chose, was because school administrative staff and school boards can make decisions about changes in curriculum, staffing. The teachers would be benefited by an early return because they can make consider changes in their methodologies and teaching. They can help place students in the proper class for the next year, for class assignments and student placement. And parents would also have an advantage in that they would have the summer after having identified some needs in their own child to make some accommodations and do some work on their own at home. One of the things that I was taken with at the governor's State of the State was that he mentioned parent involvement as one of the things he felt was crucial. And as many of you remember, I carried a parent involvement last year, was a little disappointed that it became passive language at the end, and was pleased to hear that the governor's decided that parent involvement is, in fact, important for our children in our schools, and I'm hopeful that maybe someone on this committee will tighten up that bill in the future. I think by having the test results back when they're coming, which is right at the end of the fall or when school starts, we've taken parents out of the picture in a substantial way, and I think that's something that we can change. One of the other things I heard the governor say was that we need more accountability, and I think by having our test results back sooner, it's easier to hold our schools accountable and our state accountable when they can actually make the changes that might be necessary to make improvements. So I think we need to question who these results are for and what we want to do with the information. If we want this information to be brought back and used in order to make improvements in our schools and to provide a better quality education for our children, then we need our results back in a timely manner. So, Madam Chair, that's the rationale for my bill,
and I would hope we have some support for it. And I do know that Representative Swales is carrying a bill that's slightly different, but that I would be comfortable laying this on the table so we could work together and see if we could come up with a comprehensive bill that would meet everyone's needs. I did not bring any testimony today. I know I received many calls, actually, from parents, teachers, administrators, and they're all a little nervous about making the Department of Education irritated. So I just decided rather than make everyone uncomfortable, I would bring this one myself.
Okay. Is there
Tom Boltman, if you want to testify? Welcome to the stage. Please state your name and thank you. My name is Tom Boltman. I am a supervisor in the Division of Research Assessment at the Department of Education. The department's position is that we are concerned about this bill because of some unintended consequences that it would have on the Minnesota assessment system, specifically in areas of the testing window, the structure of the test, or the test blueprints, the mode of administration, and then our logistics and quality control. With respect to the testing window, we currently test for our math and reading assessments in late April, early May. Obviously, the testing has to occur significantly in advance of that window if we're going to be reporting by early May. In addition, our science assessment currently is assessed in May. So again, that would have to be moved. In order to be able to maintain a testing window, the test is currently under law required to have constructive response items included in it. And those items are need to be scored by humans. They actually get distributed to a variety of human readers who read them, who quality check each other's scores. And that peer process takes a significant amount of time. If we were to try and move forward with a testing window that looks roughly like it does currently, and also try and meet an early May reporting deadline, we'd have to pursue the elimination of constructive response items from our test. Additionally, under mode of administration, currently our math reading tests are tested on a paper pencil mode. And in order to be able to meet the aggressive deadline of early May, we'd have to consider moving to a computerized administration of the math reading test. We've had significant concern expressed by a variety of our districts about their ability to do the computer administration that we currently have within our testing system, which is significantly less than it would be if we had to move our math reading tests onto the computer as well. And perhaps maybe the part that's nearest to my heart is with regard to our logistics and, more importantly, quality control. That we have a variety of processes that happen after the testing window that ensure that the results that we are going to produce are accurate and that they're comprehensive. The logistics end of it is making sure that all the materials have been returned to the test vendor, all secure materials have been accounted for, and no students' documents were lost in the processing, as well as once the tests are actually scored, we make sure that everything is scored accurately. It's done through a variety of quality checks that involves both our test vendor, Pearson, with the our division research and assessment, as well as a third-party quality control vendor. And to make sure that those processes are followed completely, we do need a certain amount of time. Essentially, if we were to attempt to try and meet the early May deadline of reporting, we would have to look at moving the administration of the test back several months, maybe even until a February-type time frame, which then raises a concern about the opportunity to learn the material that's being assessed. Right now, we have some people, I think, who feel like testing in May is maybe, you can be in April, is even a little bit earlier than they would like because they are missing out on some instructional time that they would prefer to have. So we strive always to look for new ways to try and report out earlier. This year, we'll be able to be reporting to districts by the end of June, and our intention is to have the parent reports delivered to districts for distribution to parents by the end of July. So we will be able to be earlier than we were last year. Still not as early as we would like, but earlier than we were before. But most importantly, while we are striving to be fast, we are striving to be right. And I guess we want to make sure that the right is always done first. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else in the audience who would like to testify in favor or in opposition of the bill? Members, we have Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Boltman, can you tell us when the last tests were released, and also the year before? What was the release period with those test results?
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, the test results in 2007 for the math reading assessments were released in late July, and they were parent reports were delivered to districts in late August. I know I received my daughter's parent report in the latter part of September, so it's into the next school year. The year prior to that, in 2006, we were going through our standard-setting procedures for the MCA2. That required a significantly longer period of time than we did in 2007, and I believe that those reports weren't into districts until November of 2006.
Well, Madam Chair and members, and I really appreciate Representative Norton bringing this issue forward, and I look forward to to hear Representative Wales' issue. I mean, I think that there's a tension here, and a couple of tension points, and one is, and Representative Norton, I love how you framed this issue earlier in terms of putting the question on the table of, you know, so what are the test results for? And I suspect actually there's probably several answers to that, and I think that sets up sort of the tension that exists here, and I think it's legitimate for us to be vetting that through. There's clearly an improvement expectation that some folks have in terms of improvement possibilities for the individual students, but also improvement possibilities for the practices of the schools. And then there's also some expectation of being able to report, you know, sort of a point in time, you know, achievement level dynamic for students. And I think as we go forward in vetting through Representative Swales' bill, I want us to keep those issues in mind because I think there's some real important choices that we need to make here. And I would hope that we can get very creative between the legislative branch and executive branch in making sure that we don't sacrifice one over the other. The big concern in 2006, for whatever, you know, rationale was that the entire issue of being able to focus on improvement in as close to real time as possible was pretty much lost. And we certainly, as individual legislators, heard a lot of concern that's made from parents and schools and school districts that we represent. So I want to thank you for bringing this forward and look forward to debating the Swales bill and working with the department and trying to find what I think is the need for a much better balance in the time frame.
Either of you want to respond? Comment? Okay, members, we have three people who have asked to speak, and I think that this is a really important subject, so I want to make sure that we all have time. So would you please try to be very concise with your comments or questions? And we are going to end at 9 o'clock. So, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Real quick, a question to Representative Norton. Was it Florida that you cited as the state that had moved forward?
It was Representative Benson, Madam Chair.
And I'd like to ask the testifier whether your department has communicated with Florida to find out how they were able to facilitate these improvements in the speed of delivery.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't recall that, or don't know that we have communicated with Florida, but I've already made myself a note to do so. So I'd like to know more about what they're doing.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hornsby.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be brief because I think Representative Mariani kind of captured what I was interested in, but I do want to thank you and appreciate the work you're doing. This is very, very important, and I hope that when you know, work with Representative Swales and the others, that even if the Department of Education has concerns, don't back down. I mean, this is really critical for students and parents and teachers, and I really encourage you to just move forward, you know, notwithstanding even if they're still opposed after the work that you're doing on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have one comment also, and it'll be brief. As many of the students that pick their classes and so on, that determines a lot of times what schools will use in their budget to figure out what teachers will teach and so on. And so when we look at this and we get the results in June, July, or even later, the classes have already been pretty much chosen and selected, and the budgets have been set. So what ends up happening if students have to move into newly made courses because of the results of the test? So then it goes back to what Representative Mariani was saying about who is the test for and what do we do with it. So I just wanted to share that comment.
Thank you. Representative Jordan. Well, I'll just, I didn't give qualifications. I don't know that legislators need them, but I did serve on the Rochester School Board for 8 years and have been very involved as a parent for, well, since I had children many years ago. So this issue isn't just new to me. This is an issue I felt passionately about, and I've watched the MCA process fall into place, and even before, you know, Todd Left Behind, what the state was doing, and I just feel like we've gone too far away from what we need to do to provide the very best education we can for our kids, in an effort sometimes to spend too much time pointing out school's faults, and that's not really what the testing should be about. So, again, I thank you for the conversation here. I hope this committee, while I don't serve on it, and I miss education a great deal, but that you'll continue to have some robust discussion, and if I can help in any way, I would be most happy to do so.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just another little note. I discovered or found out or been told that we have a new assistant commissioner who is from Florida, Hodgman Laffer, I believe is the name. Maybe she could shed some light on this issue of Florida and how they were able to move forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative, she was the one I was going to start my follow-up with.
Good, we're all on the same page here. Very interesting topic and very relevant. So thank you very much, Representative Thornton, for bringing this forward. The chair moves that House File 26.3 be laid on the table. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion is... Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Mayor Mariani, I wonder if I didn't get back to earlier, but I just spoke with Representative Dreiling, and we do think it should go to the Government Operations Committee after this.
Thank you. I won't repeat that.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members, House File 3470 is a continuation of work begun last session, I think heard before this committee, to begin to create a common vision of technology, including tools for better tools for accountability, making classrooms more relevant to students who live in a very different technical age than any of us grew up in, and to prepare them better for a highly technical economy. I have with me Patrick Plant from the Anoka-Hennepin School District, who testified last year. Since that time, in addition to passing approximately $90 million in funds last session that could districts can use to spend on technology, the Department of Education has assembled a group which is now called the Minnesota Education Technology Task Force to begin to assemble this common vision of what technology can mean in districts across the state and to set a common set of standards for all districts to follow and align with over time. A key part of that will be to identify funding gaps that exist and act as barriers for getting this vision implemented. I'd be happy to go through the bill, but I think it would be better if Mr. Plant were to just give a brief overview of the work that the task force has been doing in the last year and why, through a very collaborative and I think very effective process that has involved school districts from all over the state as well as the Department of Education and legislators in coming up with this vision.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Mr. Plant.
Madam Chair, members of the E-12 Education Committee of the House, thank you for giving me the opportunity to present this morning on this issue. I'm Patrick Plant, Director of Technology and Information Services for Anoka-Hennepin School District, and today I'm also representing NEMO, which is the state of Minnesota Educational Media and Technology Organization, and of course I'm a member of the task force itself. The task force is a partnership proposal between Minnesota and its school districts and the Department of Education to advance all of the things that Representative Winkler has already spoken to. And we started our work actually late last summer in follow-up to last session, and the participants of the task force you'll see represented in the presentation here from a district standpoint. Also regional cooperatives were represented on the task force, and there were a number of Department of Education staff that were very actively engaged in helping lead the process in working with the district. And I will tell you, of course, Representative Winkler and also Senator Bonner from the legislature were involved. And it has been a very effective, very positive progress I believe we've made to date, dealing with what are, frankly, very complex and broad issues. The vision for the technology partnership and really belief is that through a strong partnership between school districts and the Department of Education, we really can use technology to improve student achievement. And what we're suggesting is that in working with districts and regional cooperatives, that the Department of Education is well positioned to provide a foundation of flexible shared services. And what do I mean by shared services? That ranges from not extremely glamorous activities like internet filtering and spam filtering but very necessary things, virus prevention, to common sets of tools that we can probably more effectively leverage and manage for providing individual learner data to support learning. That the district's need through a cooperative and collaborative process to really most effectively leverage the limited dollars we have. To take a step back for just a second, in last year's testimony, one of the things that we presented was information on district capacity to meet statewide objectives like online testing. And frankly, the capacity from a sampling of a third of our school districts showed that there was a great concern and great need to improve the access to technology out there before districts would be prepared. And one of the measures, of course, that the legislature took was providing that one-time capital dollar amount, which is very much appreciated in districts. Just another piece that was shown last year was a chart that you have in your handouts that shows the real disparate patchwork funding sources that have been the basis for student access in Anoka-Hennepin School District that I've been told by many is really representative of the condition of the state at large. But you'll see heavily needed things like fundraising and one-time sources that do not produce really a good situation for long-term planning. Now, what is MET or the Minnesota Educational Technology Task Force suggesting we do about that? First off, this pyramid represents the focus of what we're looking to achieve. And of course, at the top is what it's really all about, which is improving educational achievement. In the next two boxes of the triangle, really at that level, we're talking about what districts and schools need to do. And that's integrating technology on a daily basis in learning so that students can gain the skills they need. And I'll speak about that a little bit more later. It's also effective use of data to more individualize a student's progress prescription. And then what the state can do in assisting that is really the next two layers, and that's provide things like more effective data sharing. So when we talk about shared services, it's not only the things we do currently, but it's the things that we can't do, like share data more effectively between schools, between districts, and with the state, and simplified reporting. So to achieve that, what NET has determined is that there are six different standard areas to be defined and then addressed and up to be analyzed against. The first is really teaching and learning technology, which is really the skills teachers need to be effective and the skills students need to be competitive in a global workplace. The second are the tools themselves, and that ranges from computers and projectors and audio support to the software that's needed. The third are shared services, which I've already spoken to. And the fourth are more standardized best practices for everything from security to internet safety. The fifth is the more effective use of data, electronic cume folders or electronic transcripts moving between districts, which currently doesn't happen and for our mobile students in particular causes great concern. And then finally, the physical infrastructure that's needed, the cooling, the space, the electrical, et cetera. So those are the six categories, and with that, we'll turn it back to you, Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, the basic structure of the bill is that it requires the Department of Education to issue rules, basically putting flesh on the bones of those six standards in consultation with the group that has been working in the last 6 months, the MET group. And it's, I think, relevant that there actually is a lot more work that has been done, a lot more detail that this group has already developed, but they haven't gone through the rulemaking process. Districts then are, currently districts are required to report a technology plan to the state. This basically changes it so that they have to report their plan as in comparison to the standards that have been established and identify gaps in services and, in addition, funding gaps that they have to be able to provide those kind of services, report that to the state, and the Department of Education has to report that to the legislature prior to our budget year, so that we have every 2 years coming before us an idea of what the funding gap is that we need to meet in order to have districts across the state be able to support this kind of vision. We do require that districts align their future technology spending towards these standards. And the idea is that we're not going to require you to spend other money to meet the standards, simply that as you spend more money, we would like you to move in the same direction according to the vision that this group has put together. That's the basics of the bill. It just outlines the high-level direction and then provides what I think is a mechanism that will work to get more districts moving in the right direction and identify for us as policymakers what the real need is to fund a range of things that students and teachers need, I think, to be more effective.
Thank you, Representative. I am really pleased that we have quite a bit of time to discuss this bill. This was my goal today. This is really important. And so, members, I would like you to think seriously about what they're talking about and try to tie it into some of the other things that we have been discussing in this committee also. And have a good discussion about this today. Representative Benson.
Madam Chair, can I just mention one other aspect of the bill that I forgot to mention? It's the final, second to last section, and that relates to computer adaptive assessments, and this follows on the work of Representative Briner. Essentially, as I understand, in broad terms, the direction that we're going in is to try to turn the MCA2 system of assessments into a model that can work for reporting growth according to the report card standards that they have, and to turn it into a better analytical tool for districts and schools. At the same time, a lot of districts use the NWEA for instructional purposes, and they like that tool. Over time, if we have these two stovepipes of assessments going on at the same time, I think we're going to be spending a lot more money to do that. It'll be a waste and duplication of resources. And ultimately, it's going to be telling us two different things. I think the vision ultimately should be that the work that districts do to understand where students are in their classrooms and how they're progressing should roll up to the statewide report, which ultimately measures what I think the important point is, which is the value that the schools are adding to the students' achievement. And so this last section doesn't require the department to do anything differently than they already are, because it's my understanding that they are actually trying to figure out a way that they can put these two silos together one day. It simply requires them to report to us on what they're doing in that regard.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Winkler, if the Educational Technology Task Force does establish these state and district technology standards and guidelines, could you explain on one aspect which has to do with a common course catalog? What does that entail?
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, Mr. Plant would be better able to speak to this, but in broad terms, it means that if you're going to, for example, allow electronic student transcripts, which is important for districts with a highly mobile student population, as students move around, you want to be able to have their record move around quickly so that when they show up in the classroom, the teacher knows what they have. In order to make that kind of mobile record possible, you need to have a common definition of a lot of things, including a common course catalog, so that you're actually, you know, one district knows what the other has actually been teaching them, and you're aligning basically the work that you're doing on a common standard so that you are speaking the same language.
Representative Manning, sure.
Yes.
Representative, the only thing in addition I would add would be there are already existing national standards that we can look at. The National Center for Educational Statistics has developed standards, and you might say, why don't we have them in place already? Well, as each of these silos has grown through the decades and then been automated, they couldn't talk to each other. So there frankly wasn't a great business need or merit for districts to talk about, like, why don't we standardize some of this nomenclature, We've now reached the time when there is. So as Representative Winkler said, to get these advancements and efficiencies, and we've seen this happen within our districts, between our schools as well, where at one time we had different definitions of all kinds of things, we need to standardize them.
I'm sure. Just a comment, I'm sure that would never be the intent of the legislation, but there's not an opportunity, would you say, Representative Winkler, that that this task force would begin to dictate course offerings among schools or within school districts. If this is simply to explain and clarify what the content of these courses being offered are, right?
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, this is basically enabling work that's being done. It's not policy work on the kind of assessments that should be done, the content of assessments. It's not policy work on the types of curriculum that should be offered. It's simply saying that if you want to be able to be more efficient in how you move data, how you compare, the productivity almost of the education system, you need a technology base to do that. And the policy decisions on those other things are not addressed and wouldn't be addressed. And frankly, Patrick Plant and others have no interest in getting into those wars.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Winkler, I knew what your answer would be. I just wanted on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Winkler, for working on this issue. I think it is important, but I do have several concerns about what's in the legislation and what could potentially happen in the future. And first is when you talked about how this would go to rulemaking, I am a little concerned because rulemaking can be taken out of the context of the legislature. Sure, we have oversight over rulemaking, but rules have been made and implemented without the legislature essentially okaying it. And so that's my first concern. Second, I just want to understand the data management section of this, I think it's number 5, 2.18. We're talking about data management, and then also 2.14, technological tools and support formative and summative online assessment equipment and software. From what I've seen in some small districts in the state, they do not have the infrastructure right now to support what's in this bill. And the concern I have is, number one, if we go to a data system and we're saying we need a standard data system around the state, first of all, school districts are going to have to put in a new data system. You know, the software, hardware, I'm just trying to figure this out and what we're trying to get at here. And that could be a substantial cost. And the other thing is the district, just to get some of the technology upgraded, it was a couple of years ago and I was in a school district where they still had the Apple IIe that teachers were using to input their grades. They don't have the new computers. And so I'm just wondering, how prescriptive is this going to be? How specific is this going to be when we look at 1 through 6? Are we going to, you said before that we're going to try to leave this broad. But by this language, I have concerns that in the future people could interpret this as they would have the ability to become more prescriptive for school districts. So if you could answer the questions that I posed in that comment, I appreciate that.
Madam Chair, Representative Welty, I'll do the second part first. As you look down numbers 1 through 6, think of that pyramid. And the base level is the basic facilities that you need, whether that's T1 lines or adequate physical plant space, air conditioning, all the kind of core infrastructure that you need to be able to support the higher level technology. The point of the legislation really is to say, let's be somewhat specific about the direction we need to go in. There will be flexibility because if you set a common standard, there might be 5 pieces of software, 20 pieces of hardware that can get you to do that same point. So there will still be flexibility for districts to choose specific approaches. But what's most important, I think, is that we are talking about identifying the gaps so that, in fact, I think, just from a funding point of view, those districts that are furthest behind in the future are likely to get a larger share of the funding because they're going to have the biggest gap to fill in order to be able to come to the point where they're able to deliver on these things. And I think a key point here is that we're not telling them that they have to do it now. We're not telling them that they have a date by which they have to meet these standards. We're telling them that this is the direction we want to go in, and we as legislators are going to be looking at funding for technology based on the gap for a specific vision that these groups have worked together to create, rather than just kind of doing it piecemeal. So by putting that together, I think we actually are putting in place a system where smaller districts are in poorer districts or more rural districts are going to end up getting more funding for technology than they have in the past because they have the biggest gap to fill. And as you remember from the bill I had last year, there were originally 2 parts to the funding. One was a per pupil distribution, and the other was a need-based distribution, and there was kind of a hybrid approach. And I think that's how funding will go in the future as well, because you don't want to punish districts who have had a levy referendum, for example, passed to fund technology. You don't want to say that you can never get any more state funding and you're punished for having done this. So I think there will be some per pupil distribution, but I think there will be a heavy amount of district-specific funding that would result from this. And I think this enables that to happen. And then as to the rulemaking provision, that is something that will change, I think, slightly in the next committee. I think we'll actually move to an expedited rulemaking process from the department. And the good thing about this is that the people involved in the Education Technology Task Force are supposed to be consulted, which doesn't necessarily mean a lot, but it's an ongoing group that will continue to meet in an ongoing dialogue. And they have members of from districts all over the state. So I think information about what the department may be doing with rulemaking and whether it's consistent with the vision of this group will have a lot of places for feedback back into the system. This is my first term. I suppose I'll be here at least one more, I hope. And I intend to certainly keep my eye on this. And I would think that this will be an ongoing issue that a lot of people will be concerned about.
Thank you, Mr. Plant.
Yeah, Madam Chair. Representative, if I might just address one other element of your question, and that is, like I referenced the national standards for data itself, I know Kennepin was one of the first districts in the nation to implement a standard working with Microsoft, other state agencies nationally, other major vendors in the educational market that's called, it's a mouthful, but called the Schools Interoperability Framework that now has established standards to address exactly what you said, which is take existing systems, if they're student information systems or other systems that we're talking about, and allow them not to be displaced, but to, in a cost-effective way, be connected so you can continue to use that system, but you can share data with others effectively. And unfortunately, our state now is significantly behind other states in because of the lack of our having a statewide set of standards and plan. But literally, the standard now is being used supporting millions of students in the United States, as well as millions of students abroad in the UK and Australia, to do exactly what we're talking about. And for example, in the state of Wyoming, an approach was taken where part of the state shared service, now and we used that from the presentation, was ensuring there was an on-ramp that was created for that data plug-in for every district. And now the car that the district chose to drive onto that on-ramp, they still chose, and they decided how to make that connection. And so there are options there that are going to make sense, because frankly, in a very small district, you could use Excel to literally manage the data and then create a connector between Excel and exchanging that data. So just that you know that there is much substance out there for us to tap into, and we're not going to need to create this from the ground up.
Districts aren't going to need to exchange full systems just because of this. That's the whole point, is that you build on investments that have already been made, and maybe you migrate some of the systems in certain ways in order to make them compatible with everyone else's.
And it's a 2E is a 2E. You know, that's the problem.
Thank you. Is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify in favor or in opposition of the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think this is really great and impressive, and it's time that we move on with this. And there isn't a fiscal note. Do you have any idea what the cost of this would be to implement this particular program as it should be?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, if you're referring to once we have the standards in place and what the gap is in funding, no. but don't expect it to be small.
Oh, I know.
You have to think of this not as a big amount of money that needs to be spent all at once, but consistent funding over time, such as I think a bill that Representative Dietrich has, to give districts the ability to plan out their systems and know what the life cycle is going to be and have a plan for migrating over time. This doesn't have to happen all at once, but every time we bring systems in alignment here, it will be something that we can continue with on an ongoing basis. And so it's not like we need to do it all or we get nothing. We're going to have continuous improvement as we go along. As to the bill, I expect that there will be a fiscal note probably for the expedited rulemaking aspect of it, since we're going to change that. But aside from that, frankly, the department has been doing a huge amount of work. The IT section of the Department of Education has been doing a tremendous amount of work to get their systems ready for doing this already. And they, I think, started with a kind of a 2009 plan that they've extended out to a 2011 plan to really make themselves an institution that can offer services to districts and facilitate the kind of data analytics and other things that districts are looking for. And it's, technology, there can be holy wars in technology, but this does not seem to be one of those instances. They really have been doing great work to get this thing ready. So I just think that there's a lot of buy-in by all sides to get this moving. Except for those who hold the checkbooks.
Madam Chair, Representative, just one comment. I would have to tell you truly, I don't believe there's anyone here that's prepared to answer the opposite of your question, which is, what is the cost of our not doing it? And I frankly believe we will find that to be comparatively a very much more alarming cost.
Madam Chair, just a brief comment, and the comment is that I appreciate the bill for a number of reasons. But one is thinking through and setting up the ability for us to be able to be more dynamic with the computer adaptive assessment approach. You know, NCLB is going to change sooner or later, probably later, unfortunately, but, you know, within the next couple of years. And I think that the whole desire of the education community and policymakers to be able to access formative assessment information is very squarely in the middle of that direction. I know the department is also interested in this. And so, Representative Winkler, I really want to commend you for really thinking out ahead of the curve in terms of where I think policy trends are moving. In my read, it certainly reflects the desires of school districts to be able to forward that kind of collect that kind of information and be able to use that kind of information in helpful ways to better our schools. And so, I like the entire bill. I like the framework that we're setting up here, but I particularly do like the foresight of thinking about the computer adaptive assessment. And I can see real synergy happening here between your bill and a number of other bills, and frankly, with some of the direction that the department is wanting to move forward and what's happening at the national level. So I just want to commend you for that. Thank you.
Hearing
none,
Representative
Mariani
removes
his
motion that House File 3470 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee of Governmental Operations. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion
failed.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I have a couple of things you need to do yet. We need to, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for Tuesday, February 26th? So please be there. It's something we need to do as we are approaching deadlines. So I would appreciate everybody's attendance. Otherwise, this meeting is adjourned.